Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Welcome to the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. I'm Brian Powers.
And I'm Darren McCarthy.
Darren, we are lucky today to speak with a world-renowned, internationally known sleep guru. Her goes by the name of Nandi. And she really was shared a lot. I know you, when we stopped recording, you said, man, I learned a lot there.
Absolutely.
But it's amazing the correlation between breath and sleep.
Yeah, I thought originally it was like, you know, let's figure out where to start day one. Like, what's the first thing you do? Mm-hmm. If you had, if there was a manual to parenting, what would be on the first page? And figured, yeah, let's go sleep, right? And then you realize sleep correlates to nutrition. And if you're not getting the right nutrition, you're not getting the right sleep. And there's so many like layers to it. It's still ultimately sleep. But I think there's a lot of different reasons that parents aren't sleeping. Mm-hmm. And she had some great practical information for us, but she, you know, as far as like with the environment, you know, what's the right environment for you to present. And these are things that you can do like today, you know, I mean, I have every intention of taking out my modem from my bedroom. And I knew it wasn't a good thing, but somehow getting the sleep guru to tell you that it's not the right thing is the trigger you need.
Yeah, you always need somebody from the outside saying, hey, you shouldn't be doing that.
Right. And so, and then we touched on that topic that I know you and I have touched on in the past, where it's like you fall asleep with the kids while you're reading and what does that mean? And she had a, you know, really it comes down to self-discipline.
Yeah.
You know, why do we sacrifice ourselves to the moment so often?
True.
And then not even in the moment when we do sacrifice ourselves to the moment. So it's a weird counterbalance. It's almost counterintuitive, you know?
Yeah. No, it's you know, like I said in the episode, I love laying with my kids because it's a little bit of one-on-one time at the end of the day. But then I hate waking up, you know, at 2 a.m. in their bed with fully clothed. Right. And I'm like, all right, what do I do now? I'm wide awake. And so it's, it, again, being a little more disciplined and figuring out, you know, what works for you. But I really like the fact that, you know, she said anybody can do this. Take that 10 minutes out of the day and concentrate on your breathing, and you'll see, you know, long term, you know, a lot of improvements.
Well, yeah, it becomes a tool in the toolbox, right? As a parent, it's not like you just have a set toolbox and that's what you carry forever. Like as your children get older, they developmentally bring new challenges and skill sets to the table. So you have to constantly be changing out all your tools. And sleep is one. I mean, look at us. I mean, you know, at our age, you know, in our early 20s, you know, still dealing with sleep, you know, it's like you're always going to have to adjust those tools. And one of them is that breath and breathing piece. Which I, you know, it works. You see time and time again, but you know, why aren't you doing it? What's up?
Yeah.
Well, let's get a place to start, you know, and she does have like a little survey that you can fill out on her website.
Yep.
She can walk you right through that. She also has a book available. So, you know, change out your environment, start reading her book, get better sleep and be a better parent. It's that simple.
Done. I'll take it.
Right. I'm in.
Let's listen to the episode.
You got it.
Here you go.
All right. Welcome, Allison Francis, also known as Anundi, the sleep guru. We're excited to have you here with us on the show. Tell us a little bit about your background and kind of what's gotten you to today and where you are.
Okay. Well, basically, when I was about 27, I was suffering from chronic insomnia by that time, triggered by a few life events. but I was having 1 hour, no hour, 3 hours, then a crash. And it wasn't just for a few nights. A lot of people say, oh, you know, didn't sleep well for a couple of nights, but I'm talking years. It went on for days, then weeks, then months, and it actually went on for years. And over time, my mother said to me, well, you should have tried one of my sleeping tablets. So I tried one, and I felt absolutely dreadful the next day. And I thought, that is not the way. And I just continued darting around, trying a bit of this and a bit of that. Nothing was really working. I was doing yoga at the time, but I felt that the type of practice that I was doing wasn't really what I was looking for, even though I did learn a lot and the teacher was wonderful. And I just went off to India and I thought, I'm just going to down tools and I'm going to disappear to India and go and just wrap myself up in an ashram in the north of India. So, and I discovered what yoga really is and the breath, in particular the breath and Ayurveda. And at the time I was still suffering from insomnia, and my teacher at the time said, well, you know, go home and do this breathing technique. And it was just very simple breathing, belly breathing. And I was like, well, we've been doing lots of advanced stuff. Why are you sending me home to do something simple like that? But I did as I was told, and I just learned so much. And it just transforms everything. It transforms my sleep. It transforms my nerves. It transforms my digestive system. And I realized that you have to do certain things in a certain order to cure a sleep issue. Because what I find is people come to me and they say, oh, I'm having a melatonin, or I'm trying a valerian or something tea, or oh, I'm doing a bit of yoga. But it's the nervous system that you have to start with, and that's really how I ended up creating my methodology and doing what I'm doing now. So going from being a chronic insomniac myself, darting about, trying a bit of this and a bit of that, not really getting anywhere, and downing tools and disappearing to India, and working out that you have to do things in a certain order. It doesn't work to take a bit of this and a bit of that. You have to really work at the nervous system first. Then you have to work at the digestive system, because that can upset everything. And then you have to make sure you're absorbing everything and look after the mind. So it's a process. And that I developed over the last 10 years, that methodology. But it goes back about 30 years. The initial part of the journey was about 30 years ago.
Sure. Well, it's interesting, because education as a process is a hierarchical scenario as well. So I think a lot of parents just kind of want to pinpoint, okay, attention is the challenge.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily attention. We always talk about attention and anxiety look very similar. But prior to that, on the stage or the foundation of things, you know, you have your basic fundamental, you know, Maslow hierarchy of needs type stuff. You need sleep in order to have kind of dissipate the anxiety piece.
Exactly.
So it sounds to me like almost like sleep is a result of a whole series of process or a series of events. And whether it's good sleep or bad sleep depends on what happens prior to the actual event.
Exactly. And I think that what happened to me over these, you know, life events, I just went out of balance. And when you're out of balance, something will go. And whether you're an adult or a child, out of balance, something will go. It might be, you know, they might be screaming around, or they might not be sleeping, or they might be, you know, craving certain foods or whatever it is. But it's the same for adults. You know, it's a balance thing. And I think that is my message to the world. We don't actually need drugs. We need balance. Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you talk about, I think most of us have kind of this generic idea of what insomnia is. Like insomnia is just like, I'm not sleeping for days. And we all see it in the movies, you know, the detective that never sleeps and he's got the big baggy eyes, you know. And is insomnia more of a clinical term, meaning like you certain amount of hours you're missing, or?
It depends. I mean, there's people who have very short-lived, you know, sleep issues. There's people who have longer live sleep issues like me, the chronic insomnia. There's people who have trouble falling asleep. There's people who wake up and have trouble going back to sleep. But, you know, it's a situation where something has triggered it and you have to find what it is, whether it's short term or long term. But obviously, if it goes on for a long time, then it actually starts to become a big issue for the brain, for the body as a whole. Most, you know, I'm not a neuroscientist, but when you talk to neuroscientists and you look at research, the body needs enough time to do what it needs to do. It needs to cleanse the brain, it needs to repair the cells, it needs to nourish the body, and it cannot do that while it's awake. So the people who would say, well, I'm okay on 4 hours, well, you're not. There's not many people who can survive on 4 hours. There's about 3% of the population, 3 or 4% of the population of the world that have something in their DNA that allow them to survive, or their body can do what it needs to do in that very short space of time. The rest of us need a certain amount of sleep, and kids need more sleep, obviously, as adults for their development, you know, for the brain and everything. So, you know, we need a certain amount of sleep. And if we don't get it, it starts manifesting in little niggly things, but eventually it will start manifesting into bigger things.
I always thought it was odd here in the States that the older kids go to school earlier and the elementary school kids go to school later, right? So you would think that they would need the sleep pattern, they would match the sleep patterns a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, there's research they've done with teenagers and things that actually, if teenagers could go to school a bit later, because actually they're wired, their circadian rhythm is not the same as an adult. You know, they won't want to go to sleep at 9 o'clock. They'll be wanting to go to sleep at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning and get up at 10 or 11 in the morning. You know, that's the way that they naturally develop. So schools respected that part of their schooling, it would probably be very helpful instead of actually making them go to bed, making them go to school early, you know, when they're really not rested because they're not able to sleep. A lot of teenagers can't sleep at 9 p.m. They don't want to sleep at 9 p.m. or they don't fall asleep at 9 p.m. either.
Right, you know, and their bodies are growing and they've got a lot going on, obviously, in their minds as well. And
if they'd only realize that, then in their 40s they're going to want to sleep at 9 p.m.
Oh yeah. By the time you're 40, you'll be in bed at 9 o'clock.
I miss it. Maybe give us, you know, I know your book, Breathe Better, Sleep Better. Talk about the you know, how breathing and sleep are kind of intertwined and connected.
Okay, well, the breath is intimately linked with the nervous system. There's some research that came out, there's lots of research actually, but one particular piece of research that came out actually when I was writing my book, they found neurons in the brain that actually spy on the breath. So the moment the breathing pattern changes, then that informs the nervous system. So if your breathing pattern becomes shorter and more shallow, that's a signal to the nervous system. So the brain goes, oh, the breath's changed, something's wrong, so I need to ramp up. Mm-hmm. And equally, if the breath lengthens and deepens, it goes, oh, I can calm down. And just from that perspective, if you were to lengthen and deepen the breath in the evening, do some type of exercise in the evening with the breath before you go to bed and you lengthen the breath, then the nervous system will calm down. So as a practice or as a tool, as a life tool to calm the nervous system down, you can use that at any time, bedtime in particular. It's like the breath is free to everyone on the planet. You breathe about 21,600 times a day. If you actually put your attention on 600 of those breaths every single day, free, no gym memberships required, you would change the state of your nervous system. You know, your digestion, because obviously when you're breathing as well, the diaphragm is supposed to be going up and down. When you're short, when your breathing is shallow, you know, it doesn't. So your digestive organs aren't getting that nice squeeze and flush effect that the diaphragm does. So long, long breath, full breathing is the most important healing tool to the human being. You can heal so many things using the breath: mind, circulation, digestion, also productivity, brain power. It affects every single system of the body. And if you use it as a tool to calm the nervous system, it will help you fall asleep easier.
It sounds like a methodology also to take someone out of fight or flight.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because then when you're in fight and flight, your breathing pattern is short and shallow. So it's very, it's much faster.
So does it start with an increased awareness of where I am in this kind of circumstance? Or does it start with, these are the tools that you need, and then you learn how to do them?
Sorry, I wasn't quite clear on the question.
In other words, if you start to, if fight or flight kind of triggers a kind of a certain a beating of the heart, a different breath pattern and everything else.
Yeah.
Does that you trigger that awareness and then you say, okay, I've got these tools, let me do some breath exercises.
I think it's like all of these things. Once you understand that you've got that at your fingertips, you can tap into that at any time. But you obviously need to understand what to do, and it's useful to go to a breath coach, or, you know, obviously I've got things in my book, I've got programs, but actually it doesn't require much. You can have one breathing technique that you use and that will do the trick. You really don't need a great plethora of different types of breathing exercises, but if you did one breathing exercise properly, regularly enough and for long enough, it would absolutely change your sleep pattern, change your nervous system, you'd be less reactive, you'd be less connected to the ego state. When I say that, because when your mind, you know, your mind is running all day long, you know, we're not really designed to be switching on fight or flight as soon as we wake up in the morning and go until we go to bed and then we think we're going to sleep. We're not really designed. We're really designed for rest and, you know, action and then a bit of rest, action and a bit of rest. And the brain, when it keeps on running, it gets connected to that part of you that judges, it keeps you small, it fears, you know, it's anxious all the time because it's always on high alert. So, you know, having a breathing exercise that you can do, you know, 5 minutes at lunchtime, you know, 10 minutes in the morning, you know, if you're a parent and people go, well, I'm a parent, I haven't got time. Well, everyone, even a parent, could manage to go 10 minutes. I'm just taking 10 minutes, doing 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening, 5 minutes during the day. Everyone could do it. It's just something that you've got to get into the habit of doing. But to have that at your fingertips is an incredible tool. How many times do you hear, oh, it took my breath away, oh, I can't breathe? Or, you know, we have a lot of language that we use around breath unconsciously, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, it's an incredible tool, and yeah, it's a discovery, and I want to share it because it's free and it's there. So,
especially now with everyone, you know, like we were saying before the call, before we kind of hit record, everybody being at home now too, you know, being able to say, all right, I'm going to take 10 minutes and go to my corner for some breathing exercises, and everybody take a piece of that during the day, you know, will ultimately help, because there's another level of anxiety with everything that's going on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that what I always say is, if you can just in the morning not reach for the phone the first thing you do and turn emails on and Facebook things, how many Facebook likes and who's interacting, you know, if you can give yourself that sacred time, even if it's half an hour before you switch on, you know, I don't switch on. I'm up at 5:30. I do a practice and I don't switch that on until 7:15 when I finish my practice. And then I listen to the news and make my tea, but it doesn't go on. It's on aircraft mode until I've actually done my thing. So if you could have 15 minutes, you know, I know you've got kids, but just that first 15 minutes or even 10 minutes without, just get up first, put the kettle on and then switch it on. Just giving your brain this time and the space. Then you're walking over the threshold of your day from a much more balanced, calm, peaceful place, rather than as soon as you've got up, it's like a sandstorm in the head where you've gone straight onto there, because it is a stressful time. Very stressful. People are losing their jobs. They don't know what the future holds. And some way to keep grounded, like reconnecting to the earth, is very, very useful at this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading that, you know, if your phone is the first thing you check in the morning, you've got an addiction.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I thought that was really interesting. I actually, like, I put my phone in a closet the other day, and I just, like, I put it away as if it was, like, you know, the prescriptive drug in the back. I was like, get away from me right now. Yeah. I wanted to, once you agreed to come on the show, I thought to myself, because I'm personally having some struggles right now with some sleep issues. Mm-hmm. And the kids are, and everybody's, you know, everybody, all of us are kind of struggling. But there's one thing that's kind of been happening for quite a while, and I think it happens to a lot of parents. We go to bed, we're told that we're, you know, supposed to read to our kids, and it's really, you know, invigorating, and it's smart to do, and it kind of calms them down. But what happens, like, 9 times out of 10 when I do that, and I'm pretty sure it happens, I know it happens to Brian because we talk about it, is we fall asleep. You know, so we were reading the book, and the book ends up on your head, you know, and it's like, you literally fall asleep at that moment. About 2 hours later, you wake up with the, you know, take the book off your face, and now you're wide awake. And, you know, I was talking to actually a therapist about this concept, and she said, yeah, you're using all your REM time, and your body thinks you're awake. I think this happens to a lot of parents, is where we're just exhausted. We fall asleep, yeah. And we wake up, and then now we're staring at, you know, the nighttime. Have you any ideas about this?
What time of the evening is that happening? What time of the evening is that? Like a 7 o'clock, 7, 8 p.m. sort of early? Yeah. Yeah, because happens?
Brian's little ones are a little smaller. So for me, it's more like 8:30 kind of thing.
Yeah. What happens is it's a bit like when people fall asleep on the sofa before going to bed, mm-hmm. because you have a hormone called adenosine. I don't know if you know what that is, but adenosine is the hormone that builds up during the day, and it's the hormone that makes you go to sleep, because melatonin is the thing that actually prepares your body for sleep, and adenosine is the hormone that actually puts you under pressure to go to sleep. And if you have a nap, which is what essentially you're doing, is having a nap at 8 p.m. and then going to bed at your 11:30 p.m. or whatever time it is, then you're losing some of the sleep pressure. So it's a bit like, you know, it's the thing that's building up that's really putting you under pressure, and then you half it because you've just had a nap. Uh-huh. And then you've got to get up and clean your teeth and get in your pajamas, whatever it is you need to do. So you're then wide awake. So if you could avoid that falling asleep, do something to avoid falling asleep, it would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Just avoid it all together.
Yeah. Well, avoid, you know, like when you feel yourself falling asleep, or, you know, have a cold drink or something to keep you awake so you don't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. I know a lot of parents struggle with, you know, either, like you said, reading to their kids and falling asleep, or laying with their kids so they fall asleep.
Yeah.
It's just a nasty, you know, I love it because I'm with them and it's one-on-one time, but then there's...
It doesn't sound dissimilar to the idea of if we were flying to come your way. You know, you don't want to go to sleep. As soon as you end up on the other side, you'll end up sleeping for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you can let that sleep pressure build up until the right time, it will help your rhythm, you know, get
there's
back.
There's that darn self-discipline thing again.
Yeah. You can. Yeah, exactly. It's letting that sleep pressure build up. But if you nap or sleep and then try to go to sleep 6 hours later, you'll have a problem going to sleep.
Sure. So you're not a big fan of, like, what the Japanese do. You know, my father-in-law used to be a ship captain. He talks about that, you know, Japanese would take a set of keys and put it in their hand, and as soon as it hits the floor, they're done with their nap. Kind of, so they're big on the nap concept.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying against nap, because if you are not sleeping, a nap in the afternoon, about sort of 2:30 or 3 for like 40 minutes, something like that is fine, because that will help you get through the evening.
It's kind of a release of the pressure, not
If you're napping at sort of 6:30, 7, or going to sleep with the kids or having, you know, an hour, mm-hmm. then you are dispersing the sleep pressure. So, you know, if you're going to nap and there's something wrong with that in the afternoon, have like a, you know, 45 minute in the mid afternoon. It's a very Mediterranean thing to do as well.
Right.
But absolutely. Not for 3 hours, because that will disturb your sleep. Some people, you know, there are some people that are predisposed to sleep issues, very sensitive. I'm one of them. 30% of the population are probably predisposed to sleep issues. Hmm. Those people will probably, if they do anything to disturb their circadian rhythm, they're, it's very difficult to get back, and it takes a long time and hard work to recalibrate. And yet other people will just close their eyes and fall asleep anywhere, anytime, no problem. And that, and you've got to think about that as well. So, you know, personally, if it was me and I had a nap at, you know, 8 o'clock, and I slept for an hour, I'd be awake till 2 a.m. So I have to be very careful to respect my rhythm and stay in rhythm and manage my, you know, sensitivity to anything that disturbs my sleep. So I really understand people when they say, you know, they can't sleep if there's a bit of light coming in, or they can't sleep if there's a bit of a noise, like air conditioning. Forget it, air conditioning. If it's loud air conditioning, I can't sleep. But, you know, so some people are so much more sensitive than others. It's not that there's something wrong with them. It's just that they have to work harder at keeping themselves in balance. It's a bit like some people have an enormous amount of energy and some people have short-lived it. It's a bit like that slow twitch, fast twitch muscle fibers, you know, the long distance runners and the sprinters. You know, it's very similar to that kind of concept. You know, some people are more adept at that, and some people are more adept at that. Some people are much better sleepers and have a nervous system that's much calmer. They have an outer skin that, you know, they're much less sensitive to anything in the environment. But unfortunately, you know, the group of people, you know, that I'm in, I'm sensitive to light, I'm sensitive to noise, I'm sensitive to cold, you know, sensitive to any change in rhythm. So it's one of those things, unfortunately. And if you're a parent and you do have that nap because you're so exhausted at 8 o'clock and you're sensitive, then it's quite likely that you are going to be awake till 2 a.m. So it's best to...
So it's almost like a, yes. So do you have some kind of questionnaire or something that helps people kind of understand, how do I fit on this scale?
Yeah, I do. I have a what's your sleep type questionnaire.
Okay.
And it will let you know whether you're a sensitive sleeper, a variable sleeper, or a good sleeper. Not that you need to find that out if you're a good sleeper, but, and it also gives you tips, because I come from an Ayurvedic lineage. Ayurveda is the Indian medicine. Ayurveda means science of life. Mm. And it's really, really commonsensical. And the only reason that the world is a bit behind on it is because when the British Raj went to India, they closed down all of the Ayurvedic schools, burnt all the books, and they had to go underground. And it's a 5,000-year-old philosophy that's really commonsensical and makes perfect sense. It's not complicated. But so that's why a lot of people go, Ayurveda, because it's lost a bit of ground, but it's the most amazing technology. And as I say, that's how I developed my own methodology, you know, bringing that into everything else that I've learned over the last 30 years.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was saying, so if somebody does, you know, they hear this and they want to do a better job on their own sleep, they have your book to resort to, but they can also work with you as well.
Yeah, they can. They can come to the website and do the quiz, and that will give them a bit of a clue of what sleep type they are and the kind of things they need to be looking at. And so they can understand a little bit more about what they actually need, because everyone's different. Everyone needs a different amount of just about everything, you know, sleep, different types of food, you know, is it cooked food? There's lots of fads as well about dietary things, you know, the raw diet and the this diet and the that diet, but it doesn't make sense from where I come from that actually everyone would be good on a raw diet. Some people don't have a strong digestion, and the people that don't sleep very well, they often don't have a very good strong digestion. And if you give them a raw diet because you think, oh, that's so good for everybody, mm-hmm. it will mess up the digestion. And then when you mess the digestion up, that will also mess up your sleep, because you have this microbe, you know, these bugs that live in your gut, and they have their own circadian rhythm, their own biological clock in sync with your biological clock. And if you upset the digestion and that goes off, then that will also upset your sleep. I mean, everything is interconnected with absolutely everything else. And some people have a much more delicate constitution. So you really have to nurture the digestive system of a person also who's suffering from insomnia, because if they've had a lot of stress, you know, it's often a case that their digestion goes off. They're either, you know, going one way or the other. Their digestive fire is very acidy and it goes out of balance, or it just becomes very low and dry and cold. So they suffer from things like constipation and just indigestion. So it's interesting that everything is connected to everything, and there's not one size fits all. So the way that I work, I take the person and deal with the individual. There are some commonalities throughout the program that I teach, but everyone has an individual segment.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because it's not as simple. You want to be linear and say, okay, if I get good sleep, I'm good. Then I can get good nutrition. But if you don't have the right nutrition, it has this correlating effect on the sleep, and then you've got this cyclical pattern. You know, that's that term in education. They use the word, good term, gestalt. So it's the whole child. And here you've got the whole, you know, the whole scenario. Thank you for putting that out to us. That's really important piece there.
Well, actually, Ayurveda also look as far as the human being is concerned. They look at when you're in the womb. So your history starts when you're in the womb. So how the mother is, you know, how her nerves are, what her nutrition is, what her environment is, what the actual birth is like. And then as you come up through human being, you know, what your childhood was like, your emotional state was like, what your school was like, how your parents were, what you're eating. And that all that as a combination creates who you are right now. And the sleep issue isn't always a very simple little thing, as in a nervous imbalance. It can be something that's a bit more deep rooted, that's now manifesting 20 years later as a sleep issue, as something that's coming up. We live with a load of pressure cookers around us. We're constantly trying to keep the lids on, but actually a lot of the stuff needs to come out. And sometimes a sleep issue is something that just needs to come out.
That's awesome. I did have one other concept that I wanted to kind of flesh out. The appropriate sleep environment, right? So I'm staring at a computer modem right here. what's your take on the electronics and that whole piece with your cell phone?
We live, everywhere's got Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And when you think of how sensitive we are to vibration and energy, it basically can't be good for you. So in your sleep environment, you definitely need to get the electrical things out. TVs out of the bedroom. Mm-hmm. No computers in the bedroom. No iPads in the bedroom. Look at your iPad when you're in the lounge downstairs. But when you go to the bedroom, you step over the threshold of a peaceful sanctuary, because that will do some of the work for you. So when you step over the threshold of your bedroom, you know, and it smells nice and it's lovely and tidy, hasn't got any electrical things in, you immediately feel a sense of, oh, I'm leaving all that outside the door and I'm walking in, and it feels lovely. And that does some of the work for you. But if you're chaotic and you've got electrical stuff in there, that you're not winding down when you go into the bedroom, that makes it harder for you to fall asleep. And as I say, some people, the good sleepers, they can sleep, you know, in Times Square in New York on the floor with all the traffic. many of us, you know, no chance. So I do say, and my phone, as I say, it goes on aircraft mode. You know, if you must use your phone as an alarm, put it on aircraft mode. I know that a lot of people say if they've got kids, you have to wait till the kids come home, or if the kids are out, that's completely understandable. But, you know, when everyone's in and home, you know, the technology needs to be turned off. And also psychologically, you know, when you turn your phone on aircraft mode, it feels like you are disconnecting from the world. And it feels like the world is not going to reach me. You know, that I've turned that off. I'm off to the world. Excuse me, don't bother me because I'm off. But if this is still on, you know, it's being bombarded with messages aimed at you, and it's coming, and it's coming all night because you're getting emails all night because you're getting emails from all sorts of time zones, mm-hmm. and messages and WhatsApp and things like that. So, you know, it's just got to be turned off. And, you know, the environment, you know, you should make an effort to have a nice environment. So declutter, you know, just no dust and just a nice environment. Doesn't have to be a big space, but whatever space it is, tidy, clean, you know, some nice scented candle or something just beautiful. So that when you walk in, mm-hmm. you get this experience of, oh, that, you know, that, oh, you know, when you walk into your bedroom. So it's sleeping and sex and that's it.
Right, that's it. Well, I don't know about you, Brian. I think we were going to have a 9-hour, you know, session with Anandi and all these topics. And, you know, I thought we were just talking about sleep, but you know, apparently there's a lot more layers than I thought.
We could talk all night. I mean,
yeah, it's unbelievable. Keep going. Yeah, there's so many layers. And it's. I think it's really helpful for parents because we don't know why we're not sleeping. And that's kind of where it starts. And people almost laugh about, you know, oh, you know, I didn't have a good night's sleep last night, or I know, and it's not that simple.
It's not. And I think when you get more and more exhausted as a parent, and, you know, I have clients that are parents and are exhausted, and they go, well, why am I not sleeping when I'm actually so exhausted? But actually there lies the problem, because many people don't realize it, but you need energy in order for you to be able to go into a deep sleep. So if your nerves are so frazzled and you're so exhausted, you're wired and you haven't got the energy to go into a deep sleep. So there needs to be, in I think, and that's what I say to all my clients who are parents, you need to look to resource yourself in order to be good role models for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, the kid, you know, to have an exhausted, stressed out parent constantly, that's not good for anyone, not good for the parent or the child. You know, whereas if the parent is a bit more resourced, it's going to be so much more fun and so much more comfortable and so much more healthy for, you know, parents and kids.
Right, and the patience level, you know, it starts here, you know, it needs to be here.
Exactly.
When it gets down to this, when you have no sleep, it's a direct correlation.
Exactly.
So the name of your website?
TheSleepGuru.co.uk.
Yep. And we'll also share that in the notes for this episode and make sure that everybody gets the resources that you have on your website as well. Okay. Allison Francis, also known Anandi, the sleep guru. We really appreciate all the time you spent with us today and we can't thank you enough.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.